Carla Wills, Brandon, our special guest. And the frog voice is still with us. But we'll be back with some more questions and your stories on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Carla Wills, Brandon with us. Carla, when Steve Jobs from Apple Computer died, right before he died, he kept saying, "Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow." What do you think he saw?
I think that he saw where he was going. People will say things like, "I'm going home," or "Oh, wow," or "That's beautiful, brilliant." Lovely is another one. I mean, they will all of a sudden, they will get very wide-eyed, and they will be looking at something that most likely nobody else in the room can see. Now, there was one person who saw angels coming to take his physically dying relative, and he said the light was amazing. And like I said, with the empathetic departing vision, the husband who saw where his wife was going and saw an afterlife, and he was so upset because he couldn't go with her. So I think that as soon as I read that, I thought, that guy, he knew where he was going. He saw where he was going. And so a lot of times people have those sorts of departing visions before they physically pass on. Now, of course, there are those who remain, the survivors, who can also have experiences. They can have dreamlike experiences where their loved one comes to them. And my sister, she passed away 6 months ago. And before she passed, I had a dream. It was the day after Christmas. And she came to me in this dream and she said, "Well, I'm going now." And then she looked at me, and she slung her backpack over her shoulder and took off in her Earth shoes. And then a few hours later, we got a phone call that she had indeed passed on.
Wow.
And I didn't even know she was that sick because she had disappeared for months. So both people, both sides, those at the bedside and those who are preparing to pass, can have these wonderful experiences where they see some sort of afterlife image, or they are shown an afterlife image by the person who is physically passing. They talk to the person who is physically passing in a dream or in conscious state. And so there have been, I would say to you, that the majority of the accounts I have heard about an afterlife state talk about several things. Some of them talk about big rooms of learning. I'll tell you that I did have a dream like that where I was in a long line with all of these people, and there was this great big building of learning. It was all marble. It was beautiful. And when we got to the door, I was told I couldn't go in because it wasn't my time.
It wasn't your time.
No. So people will talk about, there was one Jewish guy who I just loved to death. I kept in touch with him for quite a while. He said that his entire family with all of his pets were over there waiting for him, and that they were hurrying him on. That's what he said.
Does anybody ever say they saw demons?
Yes. As I said before, they will say that there was something scary, a dark person, or some sort of scary angel-looking entity, or... what I will tell you, I'm going to tell you something that's very interesting, though. People typically, if they are abuse survivors and their abuser has passed on, that's not the person they're greeted by. So hang with me here for a second.
Okay.
So that's not the person that's there to escort them to the other side. But when they do see these characters who are frightening, there's always some sort of other message to that. There's supposed to be some sort of learning experience with that. If they can just stay with it, they'll get the message and they'll learn about it. But most people, because we don't talk about this and we don't share this stuff with our kids, what happens is that when somebody has one of these experiences where they saw or felt a dark entity along the wall, they get too scared to stick with it. And who can blame them? There's no information.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame them at all.
And so then you asked the question before about hell, and I'm a firm believer that if we haven't done anything to spiritually evolve, we're going to go to an afterlife that where we're going to be again, where we're kind of stuck. And I've seen that when I've done, you know, had sensitivity with people where there's a loved one and they're totally stuck. One guy was stuck on a bench. He was stuck on a bench. He was depressed. He didn't know why his life turned out the way it did. And he thought he was going to sit on this bench for the rest of eternity until I said, you have choices. You can spiritually evolve or you can sit here on this bench. So I think that what happens is that in eras gone by, these things were normal. They were normal in a community, in a religion, in a philosophy. These encounters were viewed as normal. And then what happened is we became frightened. We became frightened of death and dying. I think that's why I've said this before, why we have so much age phobia in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and young girls who get so much cosmetic surgery when they're beautiful already, and you know, adults who they can't handle aging, they don't see the wisdom in that, how they are now the mentor, because they're scared to death. And God forbid they should have contact with what is termed a demon or a dark entity. And so as opposed to being empowered, maybe it's a position where the individual is supposed to empower themselves by taking care of themselves when they see this dark entity.
Is there a devil?
I think that there is devilish behavior.
Sure.
Most definitely. But is there that one dark entity? No, I think that people are very capable of creating that themselves. And then, you know, we have free will. We all have free will, all of us. People who get abused and hurt, That's not God doing it to them. It's some idiot, I was going to use another word, but I decided not to, who has free will and misused.
We are on the radio, right?
Yes. And so, and it's huge in our society right now. And I think it's based in fear. It's all based in fear. And so people act like little devils. And so when they cross over, what are they going to be? Struck good? That hasn't been my experience. That's not what I've seen. What I have seen are people who are not willing to do the work necessary to spiritually evolve and do the work that's necessary. Because when we go to the next phase of our existence, it's not like playtime. And I've heard so many people talk about how we get to rest on our laurels and it's just playtime and everything is peachy keen. No, we still continue. We continue the journey. And sometimes the journey is hard. And if we choose, as I have seen, so if we choose to not do what we need to do to take that path, well, yeah, we're going to be stuck in some kind of hell. We're going to be stuck there and it's going to be pretty miserable.
Who is Alexander Image?
Alexander. Oh my gosh, did you ever have him on your show?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. I don't think so.
Okay, he died at 111 years old.
No, I definitely didn't have him on.
Yeah, and he was a trip. He was sharp until the end of his days. And I was working on one of my books, and I discovered that he was one of the foremost researchers into the paranormal. He was a Holocaust survivor who lost all of his family in Europe. And he was taken to a gulag, he and his wife. And then when he got out of the gulag, he and his wife came to the United States. And he continued his passion. His passion had always been the paranormal. Now, he received a PhD in, I think it was zoology, and then he decided he didn't like that. So he went into chemistry. And he was one of the very first scientifically minded individuals to really say there is an afterlife. There are things out there that we know nothing about this, our planet isn't the only planet with life. I mean, he really rocked everybody back then. And this is back in the day. I mean, I think when I met him, he was 107 years old.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so he was somebody who, he was very open about his experiences when his wife passed. He would talk about the afterlife contact that he would have with her. And he would talk about when he was dying, right before he was dying, he would talk about the spirits, the spirit people that were all around him. And he felt very comfortable and comforted with this. And he had known, he had worked for so long in the field. We're talking probably 70 years, 80 years in the field. And most people really didn't know about him because he wasn't like a lot of thunder. He did his work. He published a couple of books.
He stayed quiet.
Quiet, yes. He did go and he visited with some of back then, in the early days, some of the most famous mediums around. And he also, he was a sensitive too. I thought he was a sensitive myself. But he was somebody who I became friends with, and he had, he lived a clean life, I'll say that for sure. And he was also, here's the other thing, he was very open in talking about the Holocaust and the gulags. And so he could return back to normal life, and he could continue pursuing paranormal activity and phenomena. And so it's like anybody who has severe trauma in their life or loss in their life, if they can't find permission to feel those feelings, so like a lot of centurions, they roll with the punches. They have disappointment, grief, loss, but they roll with the punches. That's what they learn how to do. They roll with the changes. I had 7 surgeries on one leg and 1 surgery on another over the last 2 years. And I learned a lot from those folks who could have grief and go through these difficult times like Alexander did with the Holocaust and the loss of his family and the loss of his wife. And I watch these people and watch how they roll with the punches and watch how different their sense of spirituality is as compared to somebody who has not witnessed that, who doesn't know how to do that. And so that's why I decided to start working on a project that had to do with the Holocaust and afterlife contact and why people won't talk about it. It's the same thing, George. It's the same thing in the general public, in Western civilization. People don't like to talk about it. And then when they do, I did a presentation in Italy. And when I was speaking, my words had to be translated.
Mm-hmm,
and then when people would answer back, I didn't know what they were saying. But I could tell from the gist of it who was having their grief in a healthy way and who wasn't. Just standing up there on that podium and just watching them.
I could see it. You can understand why some people would grieve.
Yes.
And have a difficult time with that.
Yes. If there has been no permission for an individual to grieve when they were younger, or if after the fact, I mean, in my family, I was told, that stuff is nonsense. Why do you talk about that stuff? This was after my grandfather and my mother had passed, and they were the ones who were really into this stuff and sensitives and believed that there was life elsewhere. But they were secret about it. They didn't talk about it loudly. But after that, when I would try to talk about it, I would get shut down. I would get shut down by relatives, friends. I realized very, very quickly that I couldn't talk about it. And so what I had to do is I had to go find somebody who could hear me talk about it. Even if they didn't understand it, they could at least hear me.
Mm-hmm.
Without chastising me or putting me down. And in that way, I was able to make peace with a lot of grief. And in that way, there were these breakthroughs that, well, Carla, you have these experiences yourself. You hear these experiences in your office all the time. Don't be such a chicken. you need to come out and you need to talk about this more verbally. So did I lose business? Yes. Were there some of my peers who thought I had, you know, lost a marble or two?
Yes.
Yes. But those individuals who have heard what I have said and what other people have said about the existence of some sort of continuation of life after we leave the physical, you know, there are people out there who it's like, oh, my goodness, here's somebody talking about this. And then what they'll do is they'll seek. They will seek out shows like yours, or they will seek out other shows where this conversation is talked about openly so they don't have to feel chastised or shamed. Or they can get some information and they can learn and they can go to books. You know, they can go to your book or other people's books and learn about this stuff. Get the information that their parents, as a consequence to World War II, trauma, loss, never ever got because they weren't allowed to have their grief.
What's the impetus, Carla, for these afterlife visitations? Why do they come back?
Why do they come back? Well, they come back. They can come either when they're in the process of passing. They can come. I had a near-death experience where I saw my mother, my uncle, and my grandfather standing in front of a golden tunnel. Of course, they can come after the fact. So they basically, it's like, hey, I'm here. I'm around. I haven't gone anywhere. And I've had people re-say to me, you know, I know he's still here because I can feel him. I know he's still here. And in the afterlife, spirit people like to mess around with electricity, which is always kind of funny. And sometimes those of us on this side don't think it's so funny when the radio is going off at the same time every night or the alarm system is going off at the same time.
Yeah, it gets to be annoying sometimes.
But really what they want to do is, see, they're on a different energy level, basically. And we're still here in matter. And so for us, it's hard for they are learning how to communicate with us just as we are trying to figure out how to hear them. That's really what's going on. So there are those in the afterlife who are very good at coming through. And then there are those, when somebody is coming through and they're not very good at it, I can feel it and I can sense it and sometimes I can see it. But when somebody is like shoving through everybody else, it's like, you know, hey, get out of my way. I've got something to say. That can also be felt too. It's a very strong energy. And so I think that where we're at today is we're at a stuck point right now, but some of the rocks are loosening up. They're loosening up because there's a little more information out there. And so I think that over time, what's going to happen is people will begin to feel, they'll be more comfortable telling the nurse who's saying, we need to get more medication for your father because he's hallucinating. They'll feel more comfortable saying, he doesn't need medication. He's talking to my grandmother.
He's doing the real thing. We're going to come back and take calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Our Coast Zone newsletter is a free newsletter for you. We send it out 6 days a week, and it includes recaps of the previous night's show and fascinating original articles as well. It's really great. I really like it. Now, how do you get it? Well, you go to coasttocoastam.com. It's in a carousel reel that you'll see. It's also up there in the Coast Store in the upper navigation bar. Just fill out all the information to pick up the free Coast Zone newsletter, because it is one heck of a newsletter for you. And as promised, we're going to go to your calls. Carla Wills at Brandon with us. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Sean in Fontana, California on our Skype line is with us. Hi, Sean. Welcome.
Hi. How are you, George?
Wonderful. Thanks.
I think this is the third time I've gotten to in my life. Third time's a charm, huh?
Wait, will you try Skype? You'll get in quicker, too. It's a secret.
Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. Hi, Carla. How are you?
How are you?
Good, good. I also emailed you earlier. What I've been wondering, and, you know, I hate to go the morbid route, but, you know, where you get, like, people in the world, and I don't know if your research ever, if you ever looked at it in this direction, where you have people that are like suffering, or people that you know, that are like dying of cancer, or that, you know, are having seizures all day. You know, considering we have free will, well, how come we can't choose? You know, I would never say, you know, suicide or anything like that. I'm totally against that. But in my research, I've always kind of got stuck at that point where I'm like, well, how come those people can't choose to just go on to the next life, which I believe in? You know what I mean?
Okay. Yes.
So have you ever come across cases like that, or have ever gone, you know, looked into that type of thing where it's like, okay, these people are suffering, but at the same time, you know, you can't, obviously you have to live your life, right? But then again, you have free will. You can't just choose to go on to the next world. You know what I mean?
Okay. I think that everybody does. And I think also that anytime, as I mentioned earlier, I had 7 surgeries on this leg. It's not going to be the same again. I have had to grieve that. I have had to be angry about it and be sad about it. When working with somebody with a terminal illness, they're naturally going to be very, very upset about that. And they're going to feel like they've been dealt a really rotten card. And they're going to actually, a lot of folks will lash out at any form of spirituality, any form. I've seen it with Holocaust survivors, and
why?
Most of my clientele are victim survivors. And so there will be people who will beg to be released from this life because it feels so painful. And those feelings are real. I mean, they can't be ignored. The deal is when somebody is feeling all that stuff by themselves, then that's a loaded gun. Because, yes, we have to go on with our lives when we have trauma in our lives, but we have to find somebody who's going to have some compassion, who's going to just listen to us, be there for us. We should be allowed to scream and yell at God or any concepts of heaven or an afterlife. We should be able to say we've been let down, it's poppycock. It's all part of the process. I don't know if I answered your question, but anybody who has any major loss, any trauma, difficulties in life, has to go through some form of grieving, and it involves a whole mess of emotions. And then there needs to be some support for that. Doing it by oneself, that cuts deeper. That cuts the wound deeper, and it increases the pain. And it can increase the pain not only emotionally but physically.
You have also looked at dreamtime premonitions of things to come. How does that tie into this?
Well, that's a departing vision. It can be a departing mm-hmm. vision, or it can be this. I had a dream about, right after 9/11, I had a dream about an airplane crashing into a town in New Jersey. And I saw the buildings, I saw the plane, I saw where the plane hit, I saw the flames, I saw people running. And I interviewed this guy in Canada. He had contacted me, he had said he had had some premonitions. We had the exact same premonition. And so premonitions of things to come. I have talked to people and worked with people who are just scared to death of those. They have them. They have them regularly. They know when somebody's going to pass, or they know when something bad is going to happen. And they really need some assistance in knowing how to have some boundaries around that so that they can. We have a choice when it comes to this stuff. If I'm feeling overloaded with too many spirit people, I can say, I need a break. I need a break right now.
Yeah.
Or if I'm having too many premonitions, I can say, I can turn it off and say, I just need a break right now. But premonitions tie into the fact that there is that connection once again with something much bigger than ourselves, that we are tapping into something much bigger than ourselves, and that we really are working in conjunction with something much bigger than ourselves.
Let's go to Sally in North Dakota. Good morning, Sally. Hi there.
Well, hi there, George.
Hi.
You know, it's while since I talked to you, and you feel better tonight, by the way.
I'm starting to lose you, so let's see if we can get you fixed a little bit here.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. Are you on a cell phone?
I am on a cell phone.
Let's see if we can get a little walk around your room a little bit and see if you can get a couple more bars there.
Around my room. I'm going in to a different room.
You're on hold for such a long time. I don't want you to lose you.
Am I better now?
A little bit. So go ahead with your question.
Okay. Well, you know, when my daddy died, I was in his room in his last hours. But a nurse came in. Well, anyway, my daddy was reaching up high, reaching up very, very high, like he was going to the angels. And
like they're going to grab his hands and bring him up?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the nurse came in the room. They'd given him some medication because he was dying of lung cancer. And he said, you know what? You guys are a large family, and your dad doesn't want to go. So I want all of you to go home and just let him go. Okay, that was about 2:30 in the morning. And at 4:30 in the morning, I was laying in my bed sleeping, and I saw my dad hug me, and his arms then started going up and up.
Uh-huh. Well, let's bring you in on this, Carla, if we can. The reaching up and things like that, he's actually seen something, isn't he?
There was the lawyer. I mean, we're talking Texas cowboy, big buckle belt, pointy booty shoes, who came in one day and he said, I have to share something with you. He said, when my father was preparing to pass, he was reaching up and he was smiling. He had a beautiful smile on his face. That's a real common departing vision that those at the bedside can often witness that. And we most likely won't see who that is. So for your audience, they need to know that they can ask, you know, who are you seeing? Even after the fact, even when they move on, it's okay to visualize them and to ask, you know, before you passed, who was it you were seeing? So people will have those types of experiences. And yes, that one last hug before they go. That, you know, that was my sister. She came by. She was her usual, you know, bratty self. And she comes around. She's around.
Yeah.
And I can feel her. And I can feel my other relatives when they were around. When I was in the hospital, and I was getting ready for my second or third surgery, I sensed with one of the nurses that her mother was there, that her mother had died from cancer, and she just started bawling, and she said, yes, that's true. I mean, I could literally feel this woman. I could feel her presence. So also, I mean, why wouldn't we feel our loved ones give us a hug? When my mom's really around and trying to get my attention, she hugs me from behind, and that's when I know she's there. And when I was so, so sick, and they were saying, we don't know if you're going to live, I felt the presence of so many loved ones on the other side, and I felt so much comfort. So it's such a thin, thin, thin crossing from this side to the other side. And what we learn from all of this is that, you know, they're still them. They're still them.
Yep.
They haven't left us. They haven't gone anywhere.
And they're there to comfort you.
And they are there to comfort you. They a lot of times they will make amends. They'll want to make amends and say they're sorry for something, or they're grieving because they can't touch us in skin. And so they have their grief to work on, or maybe they felt like they left too soon. And then we have these crisis accounts where suddenly a spirit person will come through because there's going to be a crisis in our life, or I heard from one relative, hold on, it's going to get bad for a while. It's kind of like, well, thanks a lot, and it did get bad. But just knowing that I had been forewarned about that gave me comfort. gave me that sense that all would be well. So, yes, this young woman's father definitely was seeing somebody and was definitely okay about moving on and most likely had a look of joy on his face. And it's wonderful that she got to witness that, even though she misses him in skin right now. She can still talk to him.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Justin in Bremerton, Washington. Hello, Justin. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George. Thank you guys for having me on tonight.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I had a question for your guest before one of the breaks. You asked an important question about hell, referring to some of your other guests who had conflicting opinions.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like she kind of implied that those who expressed a belief in hell were ignorant. And you had a very good guest on a few nights ago who had actually been to hell and experienced it herself. And there's been several other people who have had, you know, similar experiences. And I just want to, you know, get her take on that with, you know, the people who have actually experienced hell. And I'm not talking about the hell that she described, but I mean hell in a traditional sense of, you know, how we think of hell.
Fire and brimstone and stuff. Okay, go ahead, Carla.
I think it's based on perception. I think it's based on our experiences. I think it could be based on how we were raised. I think that it could be a number of things can add to that. And so I had a friend who passed away probably a decade ago who researched hellish near-death experiences. And she taught me an awful lot. And for her clients and for mine, she was a physician, but those experiences are very real for them. So I'm going to treat them as if they were very real for them, even though I've never had an experience like that. For them, that's their reality. And so as opposed to, I was going to say another rotten word, but I won't.
No, you can't.
As opposed to getting into a word of words about it, let's see what we can learn about it. Let's see what's really going on here.
Let's go to Nancy in Victoria, Texas. Go ahead, Nance.
Hi.
Hi there.
Okay, I got a quick story to explain this. A few days before my dad passed away from cirrhosis of the liver, my mom was visiting him in the ICU before he got sent to hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking to her, and he was like looking up at the ceiling, and he was saying, "I think I'm ready to go home." And my mom was like, "What are you talking about?" And my dad responded by saying, "God is telling me to go. It's time for me to go home."
Wow.
And then a couple of seconds later, he was also mentioning this to my mom. "Oh, by the way, your mother is staring at me right now."
How'd your mom react to that?
She was a little spooked by it.
A little spooked and shocked.
I understand that it was about sooner or later he was gonna pass. And the night before he passed away, I have seen a shadow that walked by in the hospice area, and I was like, "Whoa."
Could have been.
Yeah.
Could have been. Hey, thanks, Nancy. I appreciate that. We're running out of time here. Carla, I want you to get out your website and tell people where they can get your books.
Well, all they have to do to check out my books is go to www.carlawillsbrandon.com. They can also go to amazon.com. And I'll be honest with you guys, I buy my books used. that's because I'm cheap. I'm not going to buy my books new. And also, several of the books are on Kindle and WhisperNet, and so they can find all that on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's and Abe's Books. And just plug my name into your search engine, and you'll easily find that stuff. So.
Super. And people can email you through drsbrandon@live.com.
drsbrandon@live.com. Feel
Super.
Free.
Super. Thanks, Carla. Great having you on the show again. Let's not let 4 years go by. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.